Welcome to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And Cindy, here we are on the 32-degree day.
That's a little confusing.
We're live on WYPR. We're taking your calls, your emails. You can reach us 410-662-8780 or email us if you like, foremanwolf@wypr.org. Toll free, you can reach us 866-661-9309. And topics we're bouncing around today: heirloom recipes.
Mm-hmm.
What is it that you have
family
carried through the generations in your family?
Mm-hmm.
That I know, and I know Cindy's got a couple that she's going to share. And that Cindy's favorite topic of all time: your dream kitchen.
Yes.
Since you built a lot,
well,
of kitchens.
Yeah. Well, and professional ones, right?
Right.
Yeah. I love building kitchens, and it's so fun to adapt something to, you know, the current home. I think where it starts for me is that, you know, I've lived in a lot of different houses since I've lived in Baltimore, and I'll never forget the first house that I lived in had a stove from, I think it was probably the late 50s.
No, probably 1968. Come on now.
Well, what's the difference?
It was one of those
colors. It was old, Tony.
It was that avocado color.
Yeah, and it was electric, and man, that was the hottest stove I've ever worked on. That thing, I mean, you could boil water and in mere moments, and it was actually, even though I love, of course, gas stoves and prefer to work on a gas stove, it actually wasn't a bad piece of equipment to work on. But that kitchen still had its original manuals and everything, and it was a lot of fun to work in. And actually, one of the coolest things about that house, that was not a very big house, was that the kitchen was a square. It had an outside window. It had a cute little sort of like porchy area that they had turned into a breakfast room, and had good storage.
It had one of those avocado refrigerators.
And it had a floor-to-ceiling cabinet that you open, you know, two glass doors. And so that storage was just awesome. I loved that was built in, that it was there, and it was ready to be, it just needed to be painted, and it was ready to be used. And the other thing I liked about that kitchen was there was nothing in the center of it. So because they had not built a center island, that was not something that I think was done very much back then, we could put a table in there, and had an old wooden table in there, and I could either prep on that or eat on it, or just, you know, it was just one more great surface area to have to work on, even if it was just to put things on while you were prepping somewhere else. So it's been fun to design the different, or to work in the different kitchens and the different homes that I've lived in. And
what do you think is the, when you see all of the photographs of this is a new design kitchen, this is a, and I know you looked at a million houses.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think is the most overblown or most overrated sort of feature in the most unused, but probably was big money in a kitchen?
Honestly, nothing really necessarily comes to mind right away. I think that it's much more design thing that I've noticed lately, and I think it's because there is a design channel on TV now that's super popular. I mean, I love it. And that show, a couple of those people that have popular shows, they're all doing the same thing. They're all doing these like narrow glass subway tiles. If I see that again, I'm going to scream. I mean, it was cute the first time, or cool the first time they started doing it, but it seems to be in every kitchen design. I'm not seeing any equipment that I think is useless, but I do think that if every kitchen looks exactly the same, that's kind of a shame. Why are you smiling? What's happening?
Am I
saying something controversial?
Well, No. It's just funny.
Hey, it's my opinion.
I just say what doesn't function well in the kitchen.
Well, I don't think there's anything that doesn't function well in a kitchen. I mean, what are the basic things? You need a dishwasher. You need a stove. If you're lucky, you have space to have a second oven or two separate ovens from what might be, you know, a lot of people will build a stovetop that is just a stovetop. So it doesn't have an oven underneath it. It may have a fake cabinet underneath it, or it may have real cabinetry underneath it. I think there are certain things that if you've got the space for it, you should have in your kitchen. I guess I'm thinking a little bit more in the positive. And obviously, I would tell you not to have a microwave. I do not think it's the way to cook. And I'm not, you know, I'm not a scientist. I'm not a health person. But I question personally, I question, again, this is just my opinion, but I question whether or not they're healthy. And, you know, so I personally wouldn't have one in my kitchen, in my home. I don't like to cook that way. I know my mother has always had one. I know they're good for reheating food, and they certainly have their things that they're great for. And I'm probably, you know, irritating a lot of people by saying that. But
we're about to get an email from the Microwave Retailers of America. I think that's.
That's my opinion. I'm a professional chef, and I prefer to work in an oven. And the dry cooking method of being
sounds
in an
like
oven.
A warm place to work.
The dry method of cooking in an oven, or again, if you are fortunate enough to have a situation where you could have a wood burning oven in your kitchen, to me, that's got to be one of the ultimate, like, crazy amazing things to actually get to have in your kitchen. I personally would love to. I don't have space in my kitchen for that. My kitchen in my my farmhouse is actually not very big. It is perfect for me. But I also don't have a family. So it's, you know, if I had a big family, I would had to have designed my kitchen very differently.
I think the number one issue, it's funny, it was this, I listened to your response and I'm thinking, what is the thing that bugs me, when I see the designs?
Yeah, I mean, you obviously had something in your head. So
I didn't when I asked because I wanted to know your opinion. but now that I have it, I have a different opinion.
What is it?
And
I haven't even had coffee yet today, Tony.
Is the sink big enough yet?
Oh, well.
I have a
commercial sink in my kitchen, and it's big enough for me to get in and bathe. That kitchen is the greatest thing in the world.
Wow!
What?
Nothing.
I can clean a whole.
We'll likely not have those photographs on the website.
Yeah, I could clean a 10-pound salmon in there. I mean, you know, if I had to, I could scale and gut a big fish.
Yes,
in there.
Ladies and gentlemen, Cindy Wolf. While she doesn't have a family, she does have a 10-pound salmon.
No, but
to
I
scale
do. I do
sink.
Have parties at my house, Tony, and I do feed other people at my house. And it's nice.
You're
to be
a hungry
able to
chef
put,
with a 10-pound salmon.
It's nice to be able to put a lot of dirty dishes in there to work with. One of the things that bothers me the most about a regular sink in a house is that I can't clean a sheet pan properly.
Well,
I use commercial sheet pans whenever I can, and those things are big. And if I have a roasting pan and I can't properly clean it in a sink because the sink is okay. My house, when I bought my
not big enough to wash something.
You never should have brought this up. When I bought my farmhouse,
no, but we want to hear from listeners too.
Possibly. Oh,
hang on one second. We do want to hear from listeners. We'd like to know what they can't live without in their kitchen, or what their big design mistake was, like what, you know, what the, you can reach us today, 410-662-8780, or toll free 866-661-9309, or email us formalwolf@wypr.org. And you can tell us what you're, because I'm clearly we've unleashed some feelings here. So please go ahead, but I want people to chime in if they want to.
For sure. That's the fun part of doing a live show, is getting to hear from people. So having a big sink makes it a lot easier to work. That's all there is to it. So what is your thought on the thing that you think is overdone or doesn't need to be in a kitchen?
They divide the sinks in a bunch of different little weird ways at times. That's one. And two, I can't ever quite figure out. Sometimes there's like a warming drawer or something. Mm-hmm. I don't really. What is that for?
Mm-hmm. Well, I can tell you that one of the houses I lived in when I was growing up, actually the man that built the house owned restaurants. And he had warming drawers. He had two. Temperature, you could adjust the temperature. And quite frankly, whenever my mother had a party, she used the heck out of those things. You make your potato gratin and you keep it in there warm. You don't have to use your two ovens that you have. I think warming drawers are great. And also, it's a little bit like having a bain-marie or a steam table, but it doesn't work quite as nicely. The other thing is in my stove, the drawer underneath the oven is actually made such that you can use it as a warming drawer. Even though it doesn't say anything about it, it doesn't look like it. It's an integrated part of the piece of equipment, but it is absolutely perfect for keeping things warm.
So it's a secret.
I appreciate that thing. Yes.
Okay.
We have a caller.
We do.
Let's talk to them.
let's hear from Andy in Annapolis. Andy, go ahead.
Hi, yes. I just got a new kitchen item that I'm really excited about, and it's sous vide. And I have just a question about your opinion on the plastic that's used in the process of cooking. I mean, it's low temperatures, but still, I try to, you know, cook healthily and without plastic storage, especially.
Well, I get it, right?
Yeah.
It's...
I mean, the plastic is integral to the process.
Yeah, so. Unfortunately,
it's the only way. Okay.
It is absolutely the only way to use that product. So you're going.
And so I had read a little bit about maybe silicone as the alternative, but everyone seems to say on those write-offs, that it's not really as good as, you know, for vacuum sealing.
It's a part of the process.
So what are you excited to make in your in sous vide? What's your first big adventure?
Well, it was first thing was salmon.
Oh, good.
Actually,
oh, yeah. How was it?
Salmon.
Did
that
you?
That was delicious.
Oh, I bet.
I've done a bunch of ways with grilling. I like that it's just it adds the grill flavor, but it just really flash sears it.
Good.
It's kind of already cooked. But
that's great.
That quick sear. What else have I cooked there? Burgers. That was obviously I'm still perfecting everything. It's a learning process. But
that's cool. Yeah. Well, it's certainly fun to get a new.
Yeah, it's great to have a new piece of equipment. An experiment. Good luck, Andy.
Thank you very much.
Absolutely.
What do you think about the process? I mean, everything seems to be cooked more evenly, I guess. But what do you think about the process in general of the sous vide?
I tell you, that's for me. It's a little bit of an odd thing. When I was a kid, I played the drums, and they came out with electronic drums, and I just didn't find them as satisfying to play. So I think for sous vide, because I actually spent time cooking with steel and fire, it's hard for me to use the machine to do the same things, even though I can probably do it more consistently than I could. Does that make sense?
It does make sense, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, anyway, well, thanks, Andy.
Well, have a good Sunday, Andy.
Call.
Thank you for calling.
All right, great. Thank you.
Do you have sous vide feelings?
I don't. I know that, well, actually, one of my pastry chefs did some sous vide fruit for something, and I'll be honest, I've never worked with sous vide.
It's funny. I can think of two dishes that were starkly different in quality. One was that dish that you remember being called boiled duck.
Oh, well, yes.
Right? That was terrible to eat at a particular restaurant.
That was pretty horrific, actually.
And then there was another that was a goat belly. That's one of the best things I ever ate in my life in Catalonia. At Can Roca. Well,
that was one of the best things I've ever tasted in my life.
So
yes.
I hold so I nothing against just, the process.
Exactly. Well, I don't either.
It's always down to the cook, right?
It. Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, it's what you want to do, how you want to do things, how you want to eat. And I think it's super cool that people want to experiment. I think that's fun. It's just, again, for me, it's not for me. That's all.
When we come back on Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine, we're taking your calls live, 410-662-8780, or emails foremanwolf@wipr.org. We're talking about your dream kitchen, things that you want to have, things that you can't live without, favorite utensils, and maybe heirloom recipes. We'll throw a few of them in there. All that and more on WIPR. Welcome back to Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And Cindy, we have a few calls we want to get to. I have a question for you because we're talking about dream kitchens.
Mm-hmm.
And what is the one, like, really guilty, exotic thing you want to have besides some Rolls Royce of a range?
Yeah.
But what is the over the top thing that you want to have in your dream kitchen?
I'd like to have a LaBroche rotisserie. I really wanted to put one in my last house, and again, the kitchen, you know, my priority in that kitchen was.
So the LaBroche rotisserie, would you explain for listeners?
First of all, they're beautiful. When I did my apprenticeship, when I was 19 years old in Charleston, South Carolina, the restaurant where I worked was the original restaurant in the Planters Inn. And they had two LaBroche rotisseries. They're made out of steel, copper. Well, they can have different fittings, but steel, copper, and brass, these were. And they were just gorgeous. The base was the black metal, and then the fittings were all with the copper and the brass. And then you just saw hundreds of these white little wicks that literally look like little flowers. That's the shape of the wicks. And that's what was ignited by the flame, the gas flame. And they both had, both rotisseries, they were good sized pieces. I would say they were probably four to 5 feet across on each one. And they both had two troughs, so they had you were able to spit across horizontally at two points on both of them, and so not only could you roast pheasants, whole pheasants on those spits, but you could also do hanging brochettes. So we did snails and chanterelle mushrooms on brochette, and we could do the butterfly spit, which we would put coho salmon in, or little trout or trouts in, and it actually closes just like a book on the fish, and those rotate. You can cook anything on there almost. I mean, really, truly, you can roast a lot of different things. One of the cool things, our pastry chef used to roast whole pineapples. She would baste them with vanilla bean simple syrup, and every bit of that juice would drip down into the trough underneath. She would make sauce with that. She was one of the first people to make handmade vanilla bean ice cream at that time. And just lots of cool stuff. So it was, that is definitely my dream piece of equipment.
Sounds like it's so pretty and warming that you would use it as a fireplace when you weren't cooking on it.
Okay. Let's talk to Tina from Annapolis.
Tina, why don't you go ahead?
Hey, hey, Tina, how are you?
Good. How are you guys?
Good. Thank you.
So, what's your item that you're excited about?
We are renovating our kitchen and considering a dual fuel. And we're vegetarians, and I'm not sure if we need the dual fuel or just all gas.
I tell you what. Wood fire, any kind of real fire.
Yeah, what is the second fuel?
Any kind of...
What do you mean?
Gas and electric.
Yeah, gas and electric.
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess I just like gas so much.
Even if it's just for roasting a pepper on a gas burner.
Yeah, what do you have in your mind? Why do you think you need electric?
Well, what I've understood is that with the electric, it's better for baking. Is that true?
I don't think so. No, I have
you
a
don't.
Guess. I have a guess. No, no.
I don't know that it's.
I mean,
easy.
I don't think it's necessary.
I don't know if it's easier or harder to calibrate the.
Okay.
You definitely get more sensitive control of burners that are gas than electric.
Oh, for sure. Gas is immediate. Electric takes time. The coils have to get hot.
No, I guess the oven would be electric, and the. Range top would be gas.
Your oven, if it's got a blower on it, is going to have electric anyway. If it doesn't have a blower, it could be all gas. But
meaning convected.
Yeah, convected. But that's up to you. It's in the end, nothing. There's no right or wrong there. It's going to come down to how you want to cook. I will encourage you though, if you do want it to be all gas, you know, I you will be successful with your oven.
And with baking.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
We bake every day in a gas-fired convection oven.
Okay, that's fantastic.
Yeah, for
and
sure.
Then can I ask you
for
one
sure.
more question?
Of course,
you may
please.
Or may not be able to answer this. Do you have a recommendation?
Oh, for
that's a hard thing, and you probably can't say this on the
air. Right,
air.
Right. You're talking about for a stove.
Yeah.
Gosh, I'll tell you. I think without getting specific. okay, I can't get specific. I have a La Cornue stove. It's made in France. It's really being marketed for the American market. They have two different lines. When Tony, I don't know if you were listening earlier, but he was saying, I know there's one thing you wish you had. La Cornue makes a Chateau series stove that is unbelievably expensive, but it will last for lifetimes. It is really? All cast iron. If you can afford the Chateau series, that is a brilliant piece of machinery, if you will. And if not, like me, I have the La Cornue Fay line. It is a stainless steel line, and they're very, very, very well made. And you can make that thing however you want. You can pick the color you want. You can pick the fittings you want. And it's gorgeous. And it performs really, really well. And if you can afford a big one, I'd get a bigger stove. Mine's a 6-burner. I've got one high heat burner in the center that's just like amazing, and I'm thankful I have it. I have two lower BTU burners on the unit and two sort of regular BTUs. The oven makes the best roasted chicken outside of any of the equipment in my restaurants. It's a great piece of machinery. Now, I will also tell you that a lot of the American lines, Viking, Wolf, those are great stoves.
Say, you know,
there is nothing wrong with that equipment. Those are great stoves.
A fine restaurant sort of range at home that's sort of something of an off-brand, you know, that is...
And you love that stuff.
That I love, that is terrific.
Yeah.
That has plenty of power, and it was a very good price. Blue Star is the brand.
Blue Star, that's right.
And it honestly was a lot better price than a lot of other stuff that I could have put in there, and it's performed really, really well. And
yeah.
I've got 7 years on it now, and it really hasn't hesitated.
That's good. That's great.
That's great.
Well,
thank
good luck.
You so much,
enjoy.
Guys.
Enjoy your. That's exciting. I'm happy for you.
Enjoy your kitchen.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks,
Have
Tina.
Have a great day.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Let's take another call. Let's hear from Maureen in Bel Air.
Hello.
Maureen.
So it's your chance to roast me for not
is his warming
not,
drawer
not,
comment
not caring about warming drawers.
Oh
well,
boy.
I have
so
a
go
positive
for it.
About something
there
you said.
Go.
In summer of 2015, I redid my kitchen.
Nice.
And it was my dream kitchen to the extent that I could afford it.
Sure.
And I put in a double sink because I don't like farm sinks because my, you know, they're very popular right now, but my kitchen is very contemporary.
Sure.
I wish I had put in the biggest sink that I could fit in the cabinet.
Good.
So
oh, yeah.
That was a mistake I did make. But I'll tell you about my warming drawer. It's the best thing I did.
Good.
I use it in a variety of situations. One is I have two teenagers and a working spouse, and everybody's on different schedules.
Yeah.
So I make dinner. I put it on plates or put it in covered casseroles or something, put it in the warming drawer, and it's good for everybody no matter what time they come home.
That's nice.
So that's a great use. Another time I use it is if I'm cooking multiple course things. By the time I finish the first thing and it's nice and warm, particularly if I'm reheating in the microwave, sorry, Cindy, it's a great use for people who
okay.
live on leftovers.
Maureen's going to get us both. Keep going.
I put everything in the warming drawer and everything stays, you know, at a even temperature until the last time I cook it, or the last thing I cooked. The other thing that I'll use it for is to put my plates in there. So sometimes if you cook something and then put it on a cold plate, it gets cold so fast.
Absolutely. That's a good point.
The plates
my mother
on,
used
the plates
to do that, too.
With.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you have to have warm plates. That's necessary. So that's great. I forgot about that, Maureen. My friend also used to do that for her spouse and her children. She would hold their meals in there. That's a great. That's nice for the family.
And
perfect.
The kids love to be able to come home to a warm meal.
There you go, of course. And nice for you. It makes it a little easier for you, I'm sure.
Best thing I did in the kitchen.
Very good, Maureen. Thank you so much.
Thanks
You're
for
welcome.
The call. Good
Have
luck
good
with
day.
The sink.
Thank you.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.
Let's go to Greg and Frederick, who will ignite a battle with you and I think.
Oh. Hi, Greg.
Greg,
how are
why don't you?
You
go ahead?
Hi, this is Greg in Frederick.
How you doing? How's your day?
I'm good, thank you. I enjoy your show.
Thank you.
Thanks. So you had a...
I just had a comment about kitchen design.
Mm-hmm.
You were talking about warming drawers. I think what's much more important than that even is drawers versus cabinets underneath the countertops.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I hate is groveling on the floor to reach into a long cabinet under the counter.
It's true.
Under cabinet drawers are certainly much more convenient.
I agree. I'm with you, and my back agrees.
Yeah, I agree. That's a good point. Drawers are great, and that's a relatively new design point. That hasn't been going on for, 30 years. They're cool. I like those drawers.
Yeah. That's a good point. We redid our kitchen 10 years ago, and that's the best thing we did.
Very good. Thank you, Greg.
That's awesome, Greg.
Have a good Sunday.
Thank you.
Same to you. Enjoy.
Thank you. That's a good point. I didn't do any of those because my kitchen, I have no cabinetry in my kitchen, but even my last kitchen, I just did, I didn't do drawers, but, I did do drawers. I have a set of three drawers, but I also do all the, what are they called when you pull the shelves out? Those are awesome. That way you just pull it out.
When you pull the shelves out,
yeah, you open
drawers?
The cabinet, but they're not drawers. It's just a little shelf that comes out rather than a stationary shelf. They're like shelves, moving shelves. I also have drawers in my kitchen. Well, I had both.
I like drawers so much. I have refrigerated drawers for.
Oh, that's right. That's a good point about your kitchen.
Well, it gives us. It gives us extra counter space.
So explain that to me, though, because that's a little controversial. So you have
controversial.
Yes, Tony.
Does it harm someone when you have refrigerated drawers?
We need another caller.
Instead of a freestanding refrigerator?
Tony and I are going to continue to argue.
Who does it harm?
I like the
callers
better.
I get extra counter space. Okay. It's like, imagine you could take your refrigerator, lay it on its side, mm-hmm. and pick up that counter space. Mm-hmm. What do we have are four drawers underneath the counter that you can easily reach, and you can also keep them at different temperatures.
And that's nice.
So if you want
especially
to keep produce
cheese.
At one temperature. Mm. The joke of like when I was a kid, you'd look into like the crisper for something like the refrigerator was all one temperature. Okay, when I was a kid,
sure.
But these four drawers I can keep one at like 40, keep one at 33 for dairy.
Sure.
That kind
all
of
right,
stuff.
All right. So how do you divide things up in the four drawers?
One is pre-prepared. One is basically leftovers, essentially.
Sure.
And prepared food, that kind of stuff, and or prepped stuff. One is all beverage, one is fresh produce.
Okay.
And one is like, dairy and that kind of.
Yeah. And do you have a regular refrigerator as well or just the drawers?
Downstairs.
Oh, so you only have that in your kitchen.
That's all that's in the kitchen
itself.
Wow,
that's pretty crazy. I like it. Yeah. Yeah, I'm glad you like your stove.
That stove has been great.
Isn't that manufactured by a big company?
I think,
I'm trying to think who the company is behind
that. It's like
that.
The off-brand. It's like if...
Yeah, they're a very reputable company that decided to produce that line, I think.
It was 60% the price of any of the others.
Is there anything
but
else?
It had more BTUs than for the burners than most
great.
Of the others. So.
Well, it's a good-looking stove, too. Is there anything else unusual about your kitchen?
So, I'm sorry?
I said, is there anything else unusual about your kitchen?
Besides
the drawers, the stove, no.
No, we just have extra counter space because of that.
Yeah.
Well, and also and I should remind listeners, we're live. You can reach us 410-662-8780. Email us foremanwolf@wypr.org. And we have a couple of questions to get to here in a second. But the other thing that's a little bit unusual is the glass shelf. People always have cabinets for their wine glasses and their... the house, right?
Mm-hmm.
So then you don't use a wine glass for 3 weeks. You pull it out of the cabinet. What does it smell like?
The cabinet.
So what do you have to do?
Wash it.
Right.
And so steam it, actually. You really have to steam it, wash it.
I mean, it's
to get the smell.
It's sort of a crazy
Got
thing.
It. Mm-hmm.
We also have a high temperature.
So you have an open shelf for your wine glasses.
We have an open shelf across the sort of the entire kitchen. So it doesn't, and right in front of the window. So it doesn't block the window or the light in any way.
It's nice.
But it's as if, like, instead of closing off the light from the room, we just maximized all the counter space and the light in the kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
So that was an efficient design.
When I designed my kitchen, I never even thought about that. I didn't do this consciously, but I had.
Oh, we have a chef's challenge coming too. When you want to argue?
Okay. Well, yes.
In the final segment, yes.
So when I designed, I didn't do this on purpose, but I did do a dinner party the other week, and one of my guests made this comment, and it hadn't dawned on me. Everything in my kitchen I could take with me if I moved. That's unbelievable.
That's unbelievably practical for you.
That is, especially since, I'm there. I hope to goodness I never move again, but
there are many people living in this area who have beautiful kitchens that are filled with things that you put there.
Yes, yeah. Between you and I and me, I have lived in a lot of different houses over the years. which is crazy that we have lived here since 1994. That is amazing to me that I have lived here that long. And I have seen a lot of the houses throughout Baltimore. Ask any realtor.
Yeah, we should
and
take
I've
calls.
And I've owned a lot of different houses in Baltimore. But anyway, so in my kitchen right now, I have, as I had started to say, I have no cabinetry. So I just decided that I wanted stainless steel work tables. For me, this is what's practical for me. It probably isn't practical for too many other people, but I want to work on the stainless steel tables that I'm used to from the restaurant. And I can put a hot pan right from the stove onto a stainless steel table. It's not going to hurt the table.
Well, and you can clean it properly.
That's exactly. It. And it's just the best work surface. And then I have one more work table that is a marble top table. So if I want to roll out pastry, I want to work with chocolate, anything I want to do, I can work on that table. And then I have my gigantic sink.
You're doing a lot of chocolate work at home?
And I also have an amazing stove. So what I have in my kitchen are surfaces, three really good-sized surfaces that I can work on, plate on. And because this party I had the other weekend, I actually had two people working for me that work for me, helping me in my kitchen, and I actually got to sit down and enjoy this dinner. I mean, they had a lot. When the three of us were each working in the kitchen in the day, earlier in the day, we each had a beautiful workstation. It was perfect. We weren't running into each other. And as I said, my kitchen really isn't that big. So it worked out really well, and that's really the first time. And then I have a pantry off to the left.
It's nice to be able to work in the kitchen without
oh my
people
gosh banging into each other. I can't stand that. That's one of the things it drives me crazy about home kitchens, because I am used to working in a place where I can move freely.
Let me throw a couple of
okay
listener questions here. Terry in Baltimore, how do you slice a baked good with nuts?
A what?
For example, a biscotti. Mine always crumbles.
A baked good.
There's no magic knife that avoids the nuts when you slice through something.
No, but if you have a really sharp knife, it does help. So if your knife is extremely sharp, and depending on what the baked good is, you can either use a high-quality serrated knife, and there is such a thing, or you can use a very, very sharp high-quality knife.
Biscotti, it's also a matter of temperature, because if you wait till it's entirely cool, then it's much more likely to...
Yeah, biscotti are so hard.
To crumble.
Well, aren't biscottis?
They're intended to be that hard,
and aren't they sliced before they're? Yeah, they're typically sliced before they're baked, aren't they? Or do you?
If you some people, they're different recipes. Some people rebake them.
Okay. Yeah, I don't think I've. Yeah. Yeah. I think I've always sliced mine and baked them as slices.
Yeah,
yes.
I've always done it the other way.
I love biscotti.
But yeah, you got to get it at just the right temperature. But like when it's sort of like room temp, but it's not cooled all the way.
Mm-hmm.
The other question from Terry is: how do you cook baked beans from dry? Slow overnight or quick boil? Baking soda, yes or no?
Okay, baked beans. First of all, you want to soak them. So I soak any beans that I work with, I soak for 24 hours. First, I wash them. You have to recognize that when you're working with beans, there can be things in there with them, like little tiny stones, and they're often relatively dirty. So I will wash my beans 4 times in cold water until I'm satisfied with the way the water looks when I'm washing them that last time.
And it's not like grit or silt or something in that water.
Exactly. And they're literally dirty. And so I wash them really, really well. Then I soak them with, you know, almost twice the volume of the amount of beans, or maybe even 3 times the volume. You can either sit them on your countertop until you're ready to go to sleep and then pop them in the refrigerator. Cold water. I do suggest doing it in the refrigerator overnight. And then when you go to make the beans, now I forgot what the question was. I know something about baking soda. No, I would not put baking soda in there. And then she said something about boiling them. Anytime you cook beans, you really need to cook them on the lowest heat, and do not put salt in until they're done and you're ready to eat. You know,
by done, you mean tender but not falling apart.
Right. And that is your goal with beans. You want them to still be whole but tender when you're done cooking them. Yeah.
Well, when we come back on Formula Wolf on Food and Wine, we've got more listener calls. You can give us a ring, 410-662-8780, or email us, formanwolf@wypr.org, and a chef's challenge to argue about.
Yeah,
all of that
fun.
And more on WIPR.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome back to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And we have a caller, Keith in Annapolis, with a...
Hi, Keith.
Yeah, question. Hi.
Hey, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Good.
Thank you.
Okay, so we're in the process of doing a kitchen renovation, and what we want to do is we'd love to have a porcelain farm sink because we really like the idea of having a white sink just to go with the decor, but we're a bit worried about whether it'll get scratched or stained or chipped. And so we wanted to know how you felt about porcelain sink versus, let's say, stainless.
In one of the houses that Tony and I lived in, we had a second room that was the original kitchen, and we had a water pipe burst and destroy the entire room. So we had to renovate that room, and I put in a white porcelain kitchen sink. Now, that was our second kitchen. So it was beautiful. I loved it. I'd always wanted one. I will tell you that I didn't have any problems with chipping, but definitely staining and scratching. So, but I don't think it's...
Scratching is going to happen.
I don't think it's that big of a deal. I mean,
scratching is going to happen. Staining is really up to you and how good of a cleaner you are.
Yeah. I mean, things like coffee and tea, you just have to...
It would be irresponsible to manufacture something that was going to chip in that application.
You just have to be aware. I mean, if you're worried about chipping and if the manufacturer does tell you you have to be worried about chipping, you just have to handle yourself. I mean, in other words, it's a little bit like you have to train yourself how to use something like that. It's a little bit like talking to a cook in a kitchen. If I give them a $100 piece of china to work with, I'm going to tell them exactly how they're going to handle that. So you just have to, it's not going to be the easiest thing to work with, but gosh, they're beautiful. And I really did. I loved having mine. So,
great.
Yeah. A stainless steel sink is foolproof, though. I will tell you, you can put a hot pan in there. You can put, your knives in there. You can put, you can drop anything in there you want. And
you can clean anything that you want.
Exactly.
Without worry.
I mean, stainless steel is, I mean, if you had to make a choice and you weren't totally into the farm sink, I would get the stainless steel.
Okay, well, thank you so much.
Sure.
Appreciate it.
Thank you, sure. Keith. Have a good day.
Okay. Now, Chef, do you think you have the capacity for a chef's challenge today?
I do.
You did say you haven't had your coffee.
I still have my brain, though, so
good.
Therefore, let me have
good.
It there,
let's turn
Mr.
your
Foreman.
Brain loose on. Let's turn your brain loose on.
These are a lot of words. I have to make tacos? Yes.
Yes, you turn your brain loose
tacos.
On tacos. That's
Does
right.
Does it say six people? There's a vegetarian and a pescatarian?
Yes, okay. Ma'am. And you need, and they're hungry.
Okay, me too.
And they're looking for
right
variety.
Now. Okay, a few decent tomatoes, cilantro, garlic, a ripe avocado. Six for six people? I get one avocado?
Yes,
juicy.
You do.
Juicy limes. One white grapefruit. Ooh, that's fun. Small red snapper, fresh white cheese, carrots, cabbage, a red jalapeno, poblanos, three poblanos, pork, short ribs, yum. Well, this is a good list, Tony. Fresh chorizo.
I make good
tacos.
Does it
say fresh chorizo?
Yes, it does say fresh chorizo.
Red onion, green apple, a giant portobello mushroom.
Yes,
golly,
it does.
I haven't cooked a portobello mushroom in about 25 years. Chives, green tomatoes, a ripe mango, green jalapeno. Okay, so I've got peppers. This is a lot of list here. All right, so for my friends that are vegetarians, I'm super excited to do just straight, chop the avocado. Actually, yeah. I'm going to dice the avocado, immediately toss it with the lime, hit supreme, which means you cut off the outside of the grapefruit, and then you cut into the sections. That way you have none of the pith on the fruit. So the lime, the avocado, sections of the grapefruit, and a little bit of the white cheese if they eat cheese. And I think even just a little bit of a julienne of the carrots and a little bit of a julienne of the cabbage, which, I mean, the mise en place basically for the vegetarian is going to be the same mise en place for everyone else, but just omitting the fact that I have a pescatarian and I'm going to, with the fish, where did it go? What was it, Tony?
It's a red snapper.
Oh, red snapper. Okay, so with the red snapper, gosh, that's a great fish to eat raw. So take the skin off, make sure there aren't any scales left on the fish anywhere. If there's any kind of coloration or discoloration that I don't like, cut it out. As long as the fish is extremely fresh, then I can thinly slice it and make tacos for that person, for the pescatarian with the snapper. And again, that avocado with the lime and the grapefruit, that's going to be so good together with the fish. And a little bit of, what I'll do is I'll mise en place. Like I said, it's a game of mise en place. Because you've got these great peppers, the jalapeno, and the red jalapenos, as well as the green jalapeno. And so that can just be mised out with the poblanos. actually, I would make separate tacos with the poblanos because they have such a special flavor. I love poblano peppers. I would.
Yeah, I tried to give you ingredients that I thought begged separate
preparations
for different
proteins.
Yeah, it's
fun. Well, the poblanos with the pork short rib and and chorizo, fresh chorizo, and a taco. I want that right now. Roast the poblanos. First of all, anytime you deal with product, you wash it first in cold water. Make sure it's good and clean and nice looking. There aren't any problems with it. No blemishes, no issues. Obviously, product should be in great condition. Roast them whole with corn oil and a little healthy amount of kosher salt. As they're roasting in the oven, 325 degrees until they're tender, or you can char them on your stove. Tony actually referred to that earlier, where if you do have a gas flame, you can actually just char them directly in the gas flame on your stove, which is nice because you pop that in a container with plastic wrap over it, and they're going to steam, which means they're going to continue to cook, and they're going to cook through for you, so you can kind of char them really quickly if you have the gas stove, or you can do it on a grill outside. You can also char them out there. Once they've steamed, then you can easily remove that skin. So that would be part of the mise en place for the fresh chorizo, which I would julienne, the pork short rib, which is going to be shredded. It's going to be braised. It's going to be super tender, and have those roasted jalapenos with that. That would be awesome. The green apple, red onion, portobello mushroom. You have chives on here. I would use chives as mise en place. Leave it out so guests could actually just add things to their tacos as they wanted. I love the idea of green tomato, mango, and jalapeno. And actually, I would probably throw the apple in there and maybe even a little like Brunoise, the red onion, and make a taco with that. And then the portobello mushroom, you could also have that out. I would grill them. With a portobello, you have to pull what we call the gills out, the underside. Those have to be removed, and it's easy to do with a spoon. Just gently scrape them out and discard them. They're not good for anything. And I would then cut the stem off the portobello, and then julienne the portobello and saute it in a little bit of your choice. It could be butter, it could be olive oil, it could be a little bit of corn oil. And again, that might be a nice garnish for that pork short rib taco. I think I used everything except for the tomatoes, which would be part of that whole avocado business. So fresh corn tortillas. Yummy. That's fun. I'm going to have to go get tacos now. All right. Here's yours, Tony.
Tough to do. All right.
All right. So the interesting thing about your chef's challenge today is that I have not given any ingredients. I'm leaving you. This is the first time we've done this. I'm giving you the situation. Okay. And it's ironic that Tony walked into the studio today with an Orioles hat on.
Yep. Season's coming. Can't help it. I'm from Baltimore.
I know. It's good.
Going to Orioles game, feeding 15 people for a tailgate. First game is out-of-town game, so.
It's the first game of the season, and it's out-of-town. So you're tailgating out-of-town, and I want to see how you're going to deal with this situation.
I'd rather tailgate somewhere warmer right now.
Well, you can pick the town where you're going, but.
Yeah. Goodness.
So what does the rest of it say?
Well, what are you cooking? How are you cooking? How to serve the food? What are you drinking? let's see. Well, if it's somewhere warmer, if I do drink beer, and that is reasonable for a tailgate, and that is not always my thing, but I sure want some kind of like dry, clean German Pilsner or something in that vein for whatever I'm going to do. Honestly, I always like sandwiches. I always like hot dogs, but I mean, it's a baseball game, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Fancy hot dogs.
Sounds good.
If I could get these fancy hot dogs I found in a place in Chicago one time.
Ooh, Chicago's known for their hot dogs.
Yeah. I mean, first thing I want in there is sauerkraut, like spicy sauerkraut.
Oh yeah, talking my language.
Yeah, you know, sauerkraut that you cooked with chili peppers and a little extra cumin. That can be great on a hot dog. You need really good mustard. I'm afraid I don't like all the other mustards. I do just like Dijon mustard.
Yeah, me too.
Really just straightforward Dijon mustard.
Okay.
What in the world else would I put on there?
See, I've thrown you off by not giving you a list of ingredients.
Yeah,
interesting.
I gave
you
everything in the world. Well, I'd have to go shopping. You know, it takes me forever in the grocery store.
Well, I think the other thing is how are you going to get the food there? How are you going to handle it? I think the logistics of the situation are what's most important.
You have a cooler and a hibachi. You're going to be fine.
Okay. So that's what you would do. You would just take your food in a cooler. You have a hibachi.
I tell you what you need is you need those. It's not a potato roll. It's almost like a corn roll. You get them sometimes in the South.
Okay.
You can get a po' boy on these things.
Mm-hmm.
I was just in Texas, and you can get these corn rolls sometimes for sandwiches, or it almost has a texture like brioche. Oh, but those things are great. You grill those things, split a hot dog in half, put some of the spicy sauerkraut on top of there.
Mm-hmm.
A little mustard. Very cold
so,
beer.
So if you were tailgating, how would you, like, would you bring a table and put a tablecloth on? I mean, how would you tailgate? I'm just curious. I've never done this. I know how things like this go in the South, but...
I guess I'd have to borrow my brother's big black Chevrolet
truck. Oh, that would be fun. It would be fun to have a truck. Yeah, that would be great.
Because, I mean, when he and I used to go to market in the morning, that was all, we would tailgate at the end of market in the morning. We'd get all the produce, and we had everything loaded up in
his
truck.
Yeah. Oh, what are those things called?
Clark's other job besides doing the books... over the years
was doing market with me
when it was just a smaller business, and at the end we'd always get food and you know, and maybe have a beer at 7:30 in the morning to
that's a lot of work
to commemorate our work, and then unload everything to the kitchens. Yeah,
there you go.
So
you'd borrow his truck, and
yeah,
and then
you'd
just
sit right on the tailgate.
All right, so you wouldn't have a table. You'd
get
the
hibachi going on the ground, and
no
table. You don't need anything. You need a cooler and a hibachi. You need some of those darn hot dogs out of Chicago. That's the thing.
Now you make really
hot dogs in baseball season.
If you can get Skyline's chili sent to you, I'm sure you can get some hot dogs sent to you.
I don't want Skyline's chili sent
to
me.
I haven't had that since I was in high school. All right.
No. Well, Cincinnati is a very nice town.
It is.
That's not that's not going to be it. Well, I think we're getting close to all we have time for.
That's fun.
And now you make me really want baseball season.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to send us any... emails or correspondence about the program, it's ForemanWolf@WYPR.org. If you want to follow Chef Cindy Wolf on social media,
you can follow me on Instagram as Chef Wolf or on Twitter as Chef Cindy Wolf. Very quickly, at some point, I talked about a book that talked about markets in Paris.
Oh, thanks
it's
for bringing this up.
Paris in a Basket. We will put it on the website now. And so, Paris in a Basket, Markets, the Food, and the People. The writer, Nicole Amy Meyer and Amanda Pilar Smith. And that book is just great. I was looking at it again today. It has a lot of history about the markets in France and in Paris particularly, and you know, also like very cleanly, neatly in the back of it outlines what market, what arrondissement each day, and there, you know, there are 20-30 markets each day in Paris. So it's a really, I hope you can find the book if you have an interest in it, because it really is a great resource, along with, I think I mentioned before, that there's some recipes in there too. So it's history, it's information, and you know, if you want to go to Paris and rent a place and get to, you know, this is one of my dreams, is to actually rent a home or an apartment in Paris and get to go to those beautiful markets and, you know, buy that amazing fish and all these wonderful vegetables and have the breads and the cheeses and all the cured meats and all the just amazing things that are in their markets every day there, and go back to the place and cook it. How fun would that be? So
it'd be fun.
Yeah.
As long as your sink is big
someday.
Enough. Well, if you want to download this program or any other podcast, please go to the Foreman Wolf webpage on the WYPR site, WYPR.org. And,
happy Sunday.
And thanks for listening.